Today's show is sponsored by Cufflinks.com, baby. That's right. This whole season, Cufflinks has been with us. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today because Father's Day is coming up. They have NCAA, NBA, NFL, DC, Marvel, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, all that geeky stuff that Dad likes. Head over to Cufflinks.com/DVR today and use code DVR20 to get 20% off your order. No minimum. Do it. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. You can find us at podcastwinterfell.com, at dvrpodcast.com. You can email us at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. Thank you, everyone, for coming. It's me, Axel Folo, and I'm here with Heath Solo. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about the finale because Heath had not had a chance to do the deep dive, and thank you, Ken. And thanks, everyone, for liking that episode. But Heath is back. We're going to talk a little bit about the finale. We're going to talk about the season. We're going to talk about the documentary. We're just going to kind of chat Game of Thrones. It's been quite a week. We're a week out now. But we are going to continue podcasting about, not, we know the Game of Thrones is dying down, but we do continue. Head over to Daily DVR, subscribe there, go to dvrpodcast.com. Going to be covering Big Little Lies with Jenny. Heath and I are going to continue doing film lists, and Heath's going to be dropping DJ solo pods as well. So we got a lot going on. We're going to continue down the road of talking about TV, but today we do want to kind of wrap it up a bit on this season of Game of Thrones. I've talked enough. Heath Snowlo, the bastard podcaster, how are you doing, my friend?
Winter is coming. Winter.
Winter is gone.
Winter's gone. Oh, watching that doc, that guy with all the snow. I was like, oh my God, winter's never going to end.
I know. That was amazing.
Doing great, Folo. It was actually good for me to, well, first off, man, the pod with you and Ken, I enjoyed.
Thank you,
to
buddy.
My utmost. No, not because of you, because of Ken.
Oh, well, I wasn't thinking of you.
No, you guys were great. I absolutely loved it. And it was what I needed, because unfortunately I a lot of podcasts, it was just, I couldn't really listen to just because it felt very, I needed a refreshing, pod, and you and Ken brought that. And it was good for me to take the week because I did the initial reaction for the first time this season with you. And so it was nice to kind of sit back. Wait like a week, think about it, and then now talk about it because of the emotions and all that happened in my household and how the finale affected us. I really needed time to process it and kind of, think about it and then watch the doc and put some things in perspective. So I'm ready to get into it, and this will be different for us because we're doing it, not only you're doing, the IR and been on Jack's show and did the deep dive with Ken. Now it's a little later for you as well, so I'm eager to go back and forth with you.
Yeah, pal, I think that's a good perspective on it. You need a little time, and actually we were doing our pre-showing, our pre-gaming, and, it's kind of rough, you want everyone to be happy, like you say, you want everyone to enjoy it, and even this week, Donald on the Twitter was like, hey, I think when you were saying, listen to the podcast, it's going to be a positive take. Maybe that wasn't the right way to say it, because we weren't necessarily all positive. I guess the real point is when you are, there's two ways of being critical. There's piling on, and then there's when you're actually giving like constructive criticism. And I think, Heath, you and I feel like it's more productive to give constructive criticism, like say, hey, it would have been more interesting if they spent a little bit more time on this. And the way that you mm-hmm. present it matters, because if people are angry, upset, mad about, like, It's just, in the end, you know, you and I say it to each other all the time. This is just a TV show. You know, it's just a story.
Yeah.
Like, if the Game of Thrones books had never existed in the world, guess what? We'd all be okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, probably.
We'd be okay. Like, look, I love Lost, but if the TV show Lost, if I still knew you and all the people that I met from it, but the show itself disappeared from all of our memories, kind of like the plot of some of those TV shows that tried to copy Lost, right? We're like, oh my God, no one remembers 4 minutes of their lives. What happened?
Oh,
the event.
God. Yeah.
But that would not matter. It's really the people that matter, right? And that's the way I kind of have always felt. So it's good to have a little distance, a week or so out. And even as time goes on, I think, you know, we'll talk about this series and all that as, I think, a little further down the road. But it does give you a little perspective. And I haven't really been on the Twitter or looking at stuff on the internet or listening to podcasts, actually, a lot about it, even though I've talked about it a couple times. So, It appears more as just a TV show to me, which I think is the better way to analyze it, right? Like, when
yeah.
you strip everything yeah. away from it.
Yeah, because, you know, for me, it's not like a podcast or someone on Twitter or something. It's not criticizing it doesn't bother me. The fact that someone doesn't like it or like parts of it, that doesn't bother me.
Me
like
either.
You said, it's how you present it.
Yes.
It's how you present it. When you just come off as an angry individual and are just making statements but nothing
snarky,
to back it up with.
Arrogant.
That's what I honestly don't want to listen to that.
Yeah, it's just
yeah,
right,
it's very annoying. And so that's been – I'm glad – that's why I don't, like it worked out that way. I couldn't do the pod last week, but I'm glad we're doing it now a week later for me because – I'll be honest that some of that stuff was starting to bother me. And of course, once you start reading one, you read the next. And I'm like, I never usually do that, but I want to get the pulse. And you know what? Like you said, it's probably 5% or whatever the percentage is of the public that's on Twitter. Cause you know, a lot of people I meet in life who watch Game of Thrones on are on Twitter. Don't listen to podcasts.
It's such a small
and I'm like,
percentage.
I forget how many other people there are.
Dude, but, it's so small. Like that's the thing too. And it's interesting. Different content creators. Like I think people who are on YouTube, a lot more of their Twitter followers are watching them. Like it's the same people. Whereas I think for a podcast, there's a vastly different audience that just doesn't even pay attention to that garbage. And it's kind of fun when we talk about it on the podcast. You're like, wow, there's a whole nother world of people who are really into this. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's a big part of their life, you know? And it's fun for us because we dip into it. But, you know, in a month, I'm not going to be really, you know, caring so much about that. You know what I mean? I have to admit that. Like, I love the community of Game of Thrones and everything, but we got to keep it moving. And it's a fantastic community, and I feel like we are a part of it. But I also sometimes, we talk about it, we're kind of visitors. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm like that in almost every community because I just don't really, I mean, we love Lost and we talk about it, but it's not like we're wearing our Dharma jumpsuits to breakfast every morning, Solo. I mean,
Wait, what?
Oh. I mean, I still do it on Thursday through Sunday, but not on Wednesday and Tuesday. Sometimes.
What about Monday?
Well, Monday's a toss-up, you know?
And this is what I want to make. And, okay, so what happened to me, like, when Lost was on and we started podcasting, that's when, I mean, we were all obsessed. Our lives were different. But for me, I was sucked in. I always watched the show and loved it. And then when
yes.
I discovered podcasting, discovered Dark UFO and the ODI, Jay and Jack, everyone, for 3 years, I was obsessed and was sucked into it. And it almost was my life. And I realized how much, you know, it was great with the community, but it was just so overwhelming. And then when Lost ended, it was like bizarre. I'm like, what do I do now? Can I watch another show? You know, and as much as I really, as much as I enjoyed the experience so much, and the people we've met and all that. I mean, it's how I met you on some island somewhere. I realized that I couldn't let a show overtake my life like that. It was, you know, it's one thing to get sucked into a show. I mean, think about Game of Thrones, 8 years of our lives, you know, but we've been able to separate. We weren't podcasting throughout the whole thing. We do little podcasts here and there. And then when Podcast Winterfell was created, jump on. And it just, it's a different feeling this time. I love Game of Thrones, and it was an amazing experience. And again, we met even, you know, newer people, different people who follow it, or people that we never even really knew. And they're like, oh, I've been following you since the Lost days. I'm like, wait, what? That's awesome. Because you forget, you see downloads, but you don't know every individual that listens to a pod or stuff. So it's like, oh, wow, that's awesome. And I just very appreciative of that. But I've had to, and again, it's getting older. It's getting more busier with my career. It's getting married now. There's a lot of other things in life that Lost was my escape, but it also became part of my life. And that's all I thought about. And now where we'll watch Game of Thrones, do some podcasts, but then we were able to cut it off. Like a year and a half, we haven't seen Game of Thrones till this season. I honestly didn't think about Game of Thrones much. You know, it was always here and there. Oh, I like to read the books, or I like to do that. But it really, I'm able to shut stuff off now.
Yeah.
You know, give it a day, and then I'm not, like, obsessed going to bed in my Dharma jumpsuit.
But I think,
you know.
But, you know, don't you think, even with Lost, though, man, and that was because that was the first, I have to say, I mean, I've been a part of different, you know, now people say different fandoms or whatever, and you appreciate something, but I was never one to be too into one. Like, I always liked Star Wars, but I didn't go to Star Wars conventions. Like, I'm just saying, I was always a geek of all trades, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. And so Lost was something that, through podcasting and through everyone else, that was the reason why it became so important to me.
Right.
I just felt like I never lost sight of that. Like, it was fun and everything, but if somebody didn't like Kate or Sawyer, I wouldn't get mad at them. Like, I didn't care. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't tell me what kind of personality they were because of the character they identified with. I just kind of, it was more about a community. Whereas I think Game of Thrones, because it's been around since like the 90s or whatever, when he wrote these damn books. And maybe the fantasy, because fantasy too has a whole long history of fandom and events and cons and Ren fairs and big turkey legs and stuff like that, that are in its history. People have like an entryway into basically living that 24 hours a day, you know, and it didn't really matter about the show. And now that the show is off the air, I see on the Twitter, I feel like kind of like I'm watching, like we're a part of the community and I feel a part of the community, but I also feel a kind of like a little like an interloper only because we're not, you know, I'm not going to, like you say, during the off season, I'm not like thinking about Daenerys, you know, like her turn in this season didn't disturb me. Like, it didn't make me upset. I was just like, I know that it made Lady Solo upset. I mean, I upset as in watching it, but like, it didn't change my view of the whole fandom in a sense, which I think for some people now that the books are coming out, it's just really interesting to me to see Iron Throne had a nice tweet where they were like, you know, breaking news. Will Game of Thrones spoiling the books turn people away from the books now? Like, there's going to be like a secondary wave of people who are like, okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, right? It's so interesting, man. Like I was saying, sociologists should be writing books on this stuff. I hope people are doing that. But
oh. like 20 of them come out next week.
We're going to have a couple pods with them. People who are going to be like, why should I read the books? Because let's be honest. I heard Justin say this, who's a book reader. Matt said this too. Some other book readers, I think Aziz, some other book readers who I follow, who I know who are like really like stay in touch with the fandom probably more so than I, where they said that they are saying, look, this is what's going to happen in the books. There's no doubt about that. It might not happen in the same way, but Daenerys is going to turn bad. She's going to burn King's Landing or do something else like that. And then Jon is going to kill her.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
I have a feeling that was a big point. Yeah. You know how they're trying to get to some of his points. And I have to say this because we're TV and film guys. It may be better in the books because you have so many pages to describe things and get into it.
Right.
TV and film are a different medium. And if you watch the doc and if you understand TV and film and, you know, you get it. There's only so much you can do in the allotted. Like, everyone's like, girl, well, you know, they declined to do 10 episodes instead of 6. Well, they still pretty much did 10 episodes with the length, so relax. Yes. And you still can't, on a page, in a book, you can write and write and describe and set it up. And no one's going to be like, oh, this is boring necessarily, because if you're into it and there's a lot of information, you can't do that on television. And I hope people realize, like, you know what? TV is different. I hope. And the problem is people are combining it too much.
Yes.
Books and the show. And it also bothered me too. And I mean, where people just, it seemed like when they didn't know what was going to happen in the show, they got scared and then they hated it versus, you know, when they knew what was coming, oh, you know, I know something you don't. But it's just like the back and forth. It just seems like a lot of people, you don't know what's going to happen. What other TV show do you know what's going to happen in? Unless you read spoilers to make yourself sound like you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Don't you think the book readers, I have to say, nobody spoiled me on the Red Wedding. I know you got spoiled on some stuff, right? Didn't you, Solo? There was something you got spoiled on, I remember.
No, well, yeah, no, I agree. We've talked about this in the past. No, like the book readers I interact with never gave a hint. Yep. That was awesome. And I got to say that was pretty darn good by the community not to spoil. Did I ever tell you what I thought I got spoiled on? We haven't. Storm of Swords, I ended up listening to the book because I had to know what was going on. So I knew stuff about Joffrey dying, Tyrion killing on the privy there, his pops, Tyrion killing Tywin. So stuff like that I knew, going in because I was upset. I'm like, I need to know. Because I was just so...
Did I know I that? Did I know that when we were podcasting?
Well, we weren't doing, like, weekly podcasts then.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, that's right, we weren't. Okay.
So that's why.
Okay. So maybe I think I knew that. I think I may have known that.
I probably told you, and then you're like, no, I don't want to know, and then I kind of...
This season? Remember earlier in the season you said to me, HBO is going to do something, but I don't want to say it.
Yes, you're right. Okay, so I don't know. One thing I don't do, when people are like, oh, you'll get spoiled if you go on the internet, I don't search out things.
Yeah, me neither.
I just let it happen, and then I look at my Twitter timeline or whatever afterwards, or I miss everything anyway. So I stumbled on some article and I was reading it. It was interesting. And then I kept going and they said a theory, I don't know if it was a theory or just a stupid thing. Like, so this is what was in this article, was that episode 6 and the finale, everyone was going to die, turned to whites or white walkers. and it was going to end that way, and people were going to be pissed. The credits roll.
Oh, man,
then you saw previews.
Awesome.
Then you saw previews. They added a secret episode. So it wasn't going to end like that. So you had to watch through the credits see next. And instead of, because someone speculated that HBO has a 2-hour slot, which ended up being the documentary, but they haven't announced anything for there. So that was a speculation.
Oh, wow.
So imagine that if everyone turned to White Walkers in episode 6 and it ended and we thought that was the finale and then they came back with a secret episode.
That
the next
would have
week.
Been, oh, my God. That would have been one of the coolest things ever to happen, ever. You know, I would have loved that. That would have been so much fun.
That's why I wanted to tell you, but then I was like, it's probably not going to happen, and I want you to be surprised if it does. excuse me. Cough drops. I think Game of Thrones became too big of a show to do something like that.
Yeah.
It just globally, 180 countries. It was just, I don't even know if they thought about that. Probably not. It might have been a fan theory or someone speculating. But to do that would have taken some cojones, and it might have started a Game of Thrones epidemic around the world. I don't know. Imagine the reaction.
Oh, man. I think that would have been super cool to do something like that. And I don't know. I had said when I was on with Jack, I said, hey, what happens if they surprised us and like Netflix like dropped the prequel in like 2 months or something? You know what I mean? They were like, happy birthday, or like 4th of July, here's a new Game of Thrones prequel, whole season. I would love that, man. And that's part, you know, that's the part of this season that I think we would hope for something like that. And the idea of something like that would make you so happy, because this was kind of, as far as a fan and being a podcaster too, and even watching the show, it was kind of a rough season, and I will remember that. But I think that people who watch this streaming, which is everyone from now on, are going to get a totally different view of this season. And I think that those two experiences, as the time goes on, will start to separate those more, just like we do when we think about other finale seasons like Breaking Bad, Lost, whatever it is. Because I remember even in Breaking Bad, there was like some blowback during the season about, you know, I mean, there was a lot. There was always problems with Skyler, people complaining about her, and some people overly complaining about her. And then there were, you know, people, oh, is this show so violent and bleak? And there were all these think pieces. But now when you go back on it, you just remember, oh, those episodes were fun. You know what I mean? And I think that when I look back at this season and we talk, and this is a great conversation to have, because the fandom podcasting, we experience that as part of the show. But then as time goes on, I do feel like those things, it's kind of like almost like oil and water. They separate. You know what I mean? And you can see the stuff that was purely the fandom stuff and the following it week to week, which is fun, but is a separate experience, really, than for those 7 or so hours that we sat in front of a television and just let it wash over us.
Right, yeah.
You know? And
I remember
that part, I think, was fantastic. As far as the show goes, it's such an uncomplicated feeling. But for me, at least, but the outside is more complicated. It's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, things change over time. You get older, you get, you know, your tastes change, or, you know, things just change. And when you let series finales are so hard because there's so many expectations. You've been following a show for how many years, depending if it went 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, 15 years, SVU 21, 20, 21st year. coming up, baby. And it's you invest so much time and you invest your time in these characters, and then there's so much pressure on a series finale where some finales didn't work, but then people liked them later, vice versa. And I remember our good friend Don Snow, heir to the Digital Throne on the Twitter. I remember even with all the blowback of season 6 of Lost, and then I remember he rewatched it like a few months later, and he goes, "Man, He's like, "Man, I really like this season now."
Like, that's what I'm saying, dude. Yeah, like, people don't, and so much of the internet and is immediate reaction, and then you just keep it moving. But it seems like one of the things, one of the trends that happens is exactly what you described. People are much more critical and much more overly emotional the first time around. And then, you know, a year later, when the prequel comes out, I bet you there's going to be all these people who are going to say, "Hey, you know what? I went back and I watched the last season of Game of Thrones. It really wasn't that bad." You know, those Axel was right. Those last two episodes are like mirror plays of each other. This was Shakespearean shit. Solo was right. They were right to be happy. What the hell? Podcast Winterfell. And then we're going to be like, "Yeah, we quit podcasting."
We're going to be like, "I hated it. Years later, I hated it. Why did I waste my time?
What are you talking about? We were wrong back then. We were all doped up on the high of podcasting. The fever." No, it is fun. And perspective, that's the word that I should have used instead of positive. I think Donald was right about that, to speak of him again. Because we weren't necessarily positive. If you go back, there's a lot of stuff where we're like, "Yeah, this wasn't so great." It's just that we'll just say, "Yeah, that was, you know, I would have rather they do this and that," instead of saying, "Oh my God, they ruined it. They're lazy, right?" It's like, calm down. You know what I'm saying? Like, and this documentary, watching this doc, I turned to my wife about 10 minutes into it and I said, "You know what? There should be a lot of people who spent 6 weeks getting upset about this TV show feeling pretty silly right now, because you see the amount of work and that these are actual human beings. And they're not like, you know, sitting at a computer typing. They're like leaving their home for months to, you know what I mean? Like not seeing their families, working 55 nights in a row. And yeah, that's their choice. Nobody's saying that, oh, woe is them. They're working on Game of Thrones. It's awesome. It's super fun. A lot of us would take that opportunity if given the chance, you know? But it just kind of gives you a perspective that plot is only one part of it. Like, we concentrate podcasting, the media, as far as like the entertainment reporters and all these bloggers and all that, concentrate on these things. The stars. Daenerys did this. Jon did that, right? The big twists on Game of Thrones. But look at this, was such a great naturalist documentary that it concentrated most on the guy who blew snow onto the set. And the executive producer, who you could tell, there's always a list of 20 executive producers, and you're always like, oh, really only one of them actually does the job. You know, all the rest of them are on there because of their contract, right? And we get to see her. And we get to see the lady who did the makeup. And it was just, it puts all this stuff we're talking about, the fan perspective and the week-to-week following of it, it really puts it into perspective. And you get to say, wow, this is just thousands of people dedicated to making art. Like, look at the sets. It's just a big art department, right? It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
And you know, and a lot of these people too, I mean, I had mixed emotions with the one lady who, you know, she hadn't seen her daughter in 3 weeks and both parents are working on Game of Thrones and she got emotional. And, or people complaining, "Oh my God, we're working nights." And I know, like, people could be like, oh my God, relax, you've got a great job, you know. But again, to a lot of these people, it's a job and there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And when you're, and that's the thing, like, I saw both sides. I'm like, oh, people are going to be like, oh, what the heck, you know, you work at a grocery store and you can see your kid, you know. But, there's, when you're dealing with the biggest phenomenon since, who knows, globally, and there's so much pressure to get stuff done. And you know, people had mentioned, oh, we're doing like a film shoot in TV time because there's more stricter deadlines with TV and not as much money. And so it's different. But when there was like, oh God, we're working nights. I'm like, I love nights. I like working nights. Like, you know, but a lot of people, you know, they like to work the days and do that. But, you know, when she's, the one lady's just like, oh my God, we may go home early today at 3. I hope it's not 6. My day's going to be ruined or whatever. And it's like, all right, you know, relax. But it just shows that it's a job to a lot of people. Yeah, and yeah. They feel the same way we do, or, you know, on different things. So, how did you feel about, the extra, I forget his name, Adam maybe, or Adam McCauley, or yeah. Tim McCauley, or whatever his name was, that this doc really focused on him. And it was almost like, you know, a fan who was an extra, and he got to really see his perspective, not just, you know, from the star's perspective, the producer's perspective, art department's perspective, but someone who actually was able to do extra work and do a lot of it. And loved the show and really, you know, felt like he was fighting for the Starks for real, yelling at people, oh, why are you wearing that Bolton shirt? You know, joking, of course. But how did you feel them focusing on him?
I thought it was a good decision. And I thought it was cool the way you could hear the director asking him when he first got there. Remember, she says to him, hey, do you mind if we follow you? And he's like, yeah. Oh, follow me? Okay, you mean to get my fitting? And what she meant was, no, we're going to follow you through this entire documentary, right? And that's yeah. what I thought she was saying. But he was just like, kind of like, no, I'm an extra. And that was what I thought was interesting, because that's why I think it was cool that we started the discussion talking about, like, the fandom. Because people, like, no matter what, people start assigning like levels to things, you know, like we're super fans, we're casual fans, we're this fans. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, I'm an extra, Kit Harington's a star. And then remember that one at the end, the other extra turns to him and goes, dude, you directed the extras.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
he starts like crying and he was like, oh my God, I didn't realize I stood up. And it's like, maybe the point, like with Game of Thrones, you know, like you play the game or you die. Like life is that game. And if you stand up and you take power, you have power, you know? So it's a little bit mm-hmm. of the kind of lesson of Game of Thrones within it, like to give yourself power. And I thought that I liked it. I mean, I thought, I'll say one thing about the doc Solo. There was no post-production. There was no editing. There was no editing in it. There was no ADR. They didn't show the distribution. They didn't show the people at the brass at HBO. It was very much about shooting, being on the set, shooting the last season of Game of Thrones. It wasn't really about the making of the whole last season. You know,
right,
it was a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be. And mm-hmm. I liked that. And I liked following that guy. I thought it was really kind of touching. And I think that it communicated the idea that that's all of us. You find your own experience within it. It's about you, yeah. not Game of Thrones.
Right. And I loved it. That made the doc for me. I love that dude.
Yeah.
And like the fact that he's like a tour guide. I guess that's his job now. And everything, and it was really cool to see that. But again, as an actor, like, there's a lot of stuff that I mean, a lot of the stuff I've been around, I mean, nothing as big as Game of Thrones, but smaller scale, but the same type of thing. And it was just, you know, of course, I wanted more of the table read as an actor. I wanted to see more than that. But Kit Harington getting so emotional, finding out he's killing Danny, like, that part of it was like, oh, my God. And, of course, Sansa gives her, Sophie Turner gives her a smirk. She kind of seems like, I'm not going to say a diva because she seems pretty cool, but she's got some attitude. She's got some attitude. She knows she's a star. She's got But in a good way. Like, you can tell, like, the question she was asking the director, you can tell, okay, she's now knows the right questions to ask and stuff. But I like her, and it just shows you the difference of Sansa the character and the actress. You know what I mean? It's very, you know, it was good perspective of some characters you see, and then you see how they are in real life. Where Kit Harington, the perspective I got from him, and this is, again, this is the doc, but it just, what I saw was this dude is a real dude. He seems very, the emotional speech he gives on his last shot, and just, he just feels like a really good dude at heart. And but there's not much, it doesn't seem much difference between his character and him, for the most part. But it was the fact that, you know, he's wearing the jacket the extras made, and just stuff like that.
And he wanted really to pay the guy the for jacket. It. You know, it was about the jacket, yeah, too. Like, the guy was saying to him, like, I'm so glad that you're wearing the jacket I gave you. And Kit Harington was saying, like, dude, that's cool, but you don't understand. This is an awesome jacket.
Yeah.
You know, like, he kept on turning back to him, and he's like, no, you got to understand something. I love this jacket. Like, it fits well. It looks good.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was really, he was trying to make, like, he was trying to connect with him outside of their... the stratosphere, whatever, you know, like the levels that are the artificial levels that are created. Yes. Oh, well, it is Stannis-y, right? I thought that was cool. And that's why the whole doc was really great to me, is that, you know, when talking about like being on a set and being on a film set, one of the things that when I first started being on them, when I was probably like, I think the first time I went on like a TV set was when my dad was on TV, because my dad used to actually be on, Regis and Kathy Lee. You remember Regis and Kathy Lee back in the day?
Yeah.
So my dad used to come on there and be like the bartender every so often. And, and I went with him a couple times. And that was when I first, and he knew some people in TV, so we went to a couple buildings, you know, like the studio, like NBC in New York. And one of my great uncles was actually pretty high up at NBC for a pretty long time. And he started there in New York, actually, as a page, and rose up. And he was like, at one point he was like, I don't know what he was. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I got to spend time at those sets when I was a kid, where you walk into a building in Manhattan and you have no idea. And then you walk into a room and it's a huge set. And you're like, it's not like, you know, because like in LA, there's these huge buildings and you walk in and it's a huge set, right? Or it looks like a house or like a warehouse and it's a huge set. But in New York,
a lot of warehouses.
Yeah, in New York, you just get into like what you think could be an apartment building. And you go up a couple on an elevator, you open up, the door opens up, and you're in this huge building, like this huge room, like airport hangar type set. And you're like shocked that it's inside of a building. But later on, you know, when I started working PAing when I was like 16, 17, and then later on working other jobs, the thing that I know you'll agree with this, Solo, is like, it always reminded me, and this Game of Thrones set is just like that when they're walking around, it's like the art room at the high school, or it's like the places it reminds you of is not like what TV looks like, which is slick and clean and beautiful, right? And lit well. Mm-hmm. It's actually like like dirty. Like as soon as the set ends, everything's a mess. Right? Like you look mm-hmm. in the background and there's like wires everywhere or there's dirt. And like you, whenever people like, cause I used to have to sweep the set all the time as a PA, you would sweep up until the end of the set. So then if you were sitting looking out where the cameras were, all the dirt starts where the cameras are. You know what I mean? Like you could actually see like little piles of dirt on the ground because when you're sweeping, you're like, kind of like, okay, really quick, we got to get that. And then everybody's, you know, but, and then just the little parts where, like the person's waiting outside of the door and then they're like, cut, and you hear it, and then they wait and the bell rings and then they open the door and go in, like the quiet on the set stuff. I just loved that it was all that, like those little touches that is what made up this documentary. And so I wish a little bit that there were more of the table read and the big and the acting stuff, but it was really kind of more about the crew than it really was even about the actors. There wasn't even a lot of the actors in it. You know, like he was the biggest actor, was that dude. We were with him more than anyone else.
You know what I find funny is, and this is from working on sets and everything, and I caught a few in this one. Why is it? Is crew members, is their only wardrobe shirts of other projects they worked on?
Yes, that's of course, that's what we wear, Solo. See, this is the funny part is that you and I are, we're on the same, like, we were actually on different sides, right? Because you're an actor. Correct. The experience you have is much different than most of the experience I had on sets like this, which was being in the art department, being a general PA, working in the production department, which is picking up all the cameras and, you know, and basically a lot of jobs I did, I would set up the whole thing, then go away while they shot it, and then come back and clean it up for them.
Right.
So I
did a PA once.
There.
Yeah, I did it once a long time ago and I said never again.
Oh, dude.
Cause I wanted to experience it. But yeah, cause you know, from what we do as an actor, it's like you get there, you go to your trailer, you know, you work on your stuff, you go to makeup, and then you just wait for them to call you. Mm-hmm. They do the blocking and everything, and then you go in. And when you're done shooting, the van takes you back and you're gone. There's Teamsters and people setting up trailers.
That was
at
me.
three in the morning, and they're there till 3 a.m. after everyone has left, you know?
That was what I did, dude. I would wake up. I would have to go pick up the van that picked you up.
Right.
Like, so my job would be, we need to pick up all the rental vans. Okay, who's doing that? I do that. We need to pick up, I would set up crafts or like, the production assistant does everything. So I did that for a number of years on photo shoots, films, and commercials, mostly commercials. And it is just all the stuff that was in this documentary behind the scenes. Like if you saw somebody going and running off that way, I was there. There's certain things I couldn't touch because only the union guys can touch those things, you know, like
the electrical wires. Yeah. I saw that one time someone tried to touch something like, no, you can't, you're not allowed.
That's a big mistake. Like you have to, when you're a PA, you have to have your hands out of your pockets ready to do something, but you've got to be told what to do. If you're the type of person mm-hmm. who thinks that you're going to all of a sudden like, I'm going to do this because they need it to be done. You're invariably going to, like, some union guy is going to start yelling at you, you know, because you mm-hmm. touch this or that. It's kind of like, it's like anything. The politics of it can be hard to navigate, but that's why I really enjoyed this because it really was like with my people. Like, I probably would have been assistant to the snow blowing guy. That's probably what my job would have been for like a couple weeks. And then I would have moved on to being the guy that makes that counts that we have enough swords and then make sure that those swords get to the set. Right. And they're in the, and then they're like, then someone would say, well, how are we going to make sure that they know they pick up the sword here? Well, okay, somebody's got to make a sign. So I got to go find somebody's computer and print out a sign. You know what I mean? Like, and that is the kind of stuff that when we, I think when you and I talk about the show and we're more, have more of a perspective about it, it's not because we're like forgiving plot mistakes because somebody had to stay up late at night. It's just that what you see on the screen is like 2% of the work that actually happens, you know? Mm-hmm. And in order to get to that point where you're actually taking it seriously enough to argue about the story points is a testament to Game of Thrones itself, because no one has ever, I've never heard anyone say an argument like, oh my God, this show looks like some dumb sci-fi ripoff, or this should be on the CW. No one has ever said that about Game of Thrones.
No.
Never. And like the fact that they employed this entire city, you know what I'm saying? Like everybody was into it. Like it was just, it was really wonderful, man. I think that, it was great.
Yeah. Even the security guard is like, is that Game of Thrones? The guy drove you. No, I don't know. They don't tell me nothing. It was great. He was totally doing his job.
That is, and that's why I loved it too, because that would have been me too. Like invariably they would have been like, one of the guys who parks cars didn't show up. We need you to go out into the and park cars and watch the parking lot. And I'd go, okay, fine. Because when you're a PA, you do whatever they tell you to do. You're everything, you know. I would just go stand out there, and people would, and then some jerk would go, "What's that, Game of Thrones?" No, I have no idea what it is. And then some nice person would come up and say, "Hey, I don't mean to bother you, but this is so awesome. I came all the way from wherever. Do they really shoot Game of Thrones here?" And then you'd be like, yeah, they do. They shoot Game of Thrones here. Actually, if you wait another hour, Kit Harington's going to show up. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then it's just so fun, man. But the table read, wasn't that amazing how they, I don't think people realize that they read through the whole season. Taking a little break from Heath and I's discussion to remind you to go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Use code DVR20 today. Get 20% off your order, no minimum. Father's Day is coming up. And also what's coming up is your favorite moments of the entire series of Game of Thrones. Remember, email us at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. I'm going to do a podcast talking about all the great moments of the series that you love, and you'll be entered to win a pair of awesome Targaryen cufflinks. So email us at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20 today.
Well, before we get into the table read question, I wanted to bring up, I think we know now why the Night King didn't speak.
He was great, though.
It's funny because, yeah, you know what's funny? When he was, doing the stunt coordinating, the choreography and stuff, I'm like, that dude kind of looks like the Night King, you know? And then, of course, he becomes the Night King, which was interesting. But I loved when he went out to the crowd. He was lifting everyone with his hands, and everyone's lifting back. That was pretty neat. That was cool. That was cool. I liked that. But that dude, yeah, man, it just wow. It just, I love the green screen shot where when he falls, you know, and it was just like, it just shows you, man, this dude, it was cool. I'm glad they showed some Night King stuff. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, no, he was. Like you were saying about the table read, like when I was shooting Snowfall, like, it was episode 5 and then episode 6 during lunch. The cast for the next episode did their table read during lunch. You know, they read through, most big productions will read through the whole, you know, next episode. And you know, so a lot of them, like the one lady was saying when she was about to burn the scripts or whatever, shred them, she was just like, you know, some of them only read their part, some of them might not have read this, you know, blah, 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 some were only given this. So for the first time, you could see the emotions of, like, Varys and, of course, Emilia Clarke and, you know, just seeing everyone's emotions, like Ian Glenn when, you know, when Brian Cogman's reading the direction of, you know, Jorah dying. And it's just, you could see the emotions. I mean, not only are we fans for 8 years of this, think about the time these actors have put into their characters and the attachment they have to their characters. So, and it's a lot of hard work. And I guess, like you were saying before, Axel, was, you know, you know, we watch the finished product and everyone can criticize and do that. But, you know, it's tough when you work in the business and you know how much work goes in and how much preparation and how many long hours. People don't get that. And it's unfortunate. And I hope this doc shed some light that it's not just picking up a video camera and shooting, and, you know, these are long days, long times, travel, being away from your family, and all this other stuff that goes in, and they're normal human beings. Yeah, sure, they make good money, and they got fans following them around, and, you know, like Kit Harington, you know, can't go anywhere without being recognized. So it's just, I hope people, and then with your stories, like, you know, and that's the thing. When we do these podcasts, we try to bring our perspectives of our lives and our careers into it. And so we're a different perspective. I mean, we're not just fans. We look at things differently. And so I really hope this doc sheds some sort of light of how much work goes into it. And yeah, we're not excusing certain plot holes or things that get edited or whatever. That's fine. That's what people are commenting on. But just look at it as the whole, you know, ball of work or whatever the hell it's called, you know, like we were talking about. And, you know, you talking about your experiences, I mean, it's amazing. Like when I mentioned the security guard and you were like, oh, yeah, you know, and then you brought up a time, the same thing. It's like I knew when I was watching the doc, I was like, oh, Axel's loving this because he's drawn from his experiences. Yeah, and I just knew.
That's why I couldn't stop talking solo because.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I expected this documentary that you and I would have, like, upon before I watch it, you and I would have equal experience in it. But it was so much more on the kind of little guy on the set, which was me, and your experience is as an act. They didn't show a lot of the actor. I actually, it was interesting from that perspective because there was actually, you could learn so much from this, but there was a lot missing. I would have liked to seen more of them blocking scenes, right? Like, how they integrate the special effects with the actors, right? Like when the Night King did his last shot, my wife was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, this is where he falls off the dragon. And she was like, how did you know that? He's standing on top of a thing jumping onto, how did you know immediately that's what that was? And I was like, oh, they're only doing that to shoot him falling. You know? And she was like, oh, okay, now I see, when they went to that shot. But it's just so interesting the way I would have liked to seen them prepare him for that. And I like the stunt, but really so much of it was like the person working at the little food truck, which,
oh yeah, they even,
I love it.
Making those sandwiches. Yeah.
I mean, she made a doc, and the director's name is Jeannie Finley, or Finlay. And she just did a fantastic job because this is the kind of, you know, when we were PAs, we used to have, and Mike was a big fan of doing this, writing, I think he would write like Union Zero on the PA trucks. And because all the other people had a union, you know, they would be like the 529 or whatever, like the electrical mm-hmm. film union. The actors had SAG, you know. So we were zeros because we were all the people there doing all the work that nobody wanted to do. And we would always say, we should do a documentary. And there would always be a PA who was like, I'm writing my script about the PAs. Yeah, you know,
like, right.
Riding in the trucks and smoking weed in the back, because our job ended when they said quiet on the set, you know? So right. It was so much the opposite. And this doc really captured a lot of that and a lot of the little people, but who are not little, they're all equal. Like, that's the thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah. If we get so sucked into the fandom and celebrity that, and believe me, there's a lot of people you saw, like people that saw in this doc that, oh, okay, that's that person. I can put the face to the name. They're doing all right financially. there's so much stress and probably didn't want to go so much into, or they might not even have had access to a lot of the actors. Like you see, you know, Peter Dinklage, is there a camera crew behind us? Like, I guarantee you, he was like, listen, I got so much work to do. I can't, you know.
I think you're right, Solo. I think there was a production meeting and it became this kind of documentary because maybe she makes these kind of docs. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. definitely this director has a touch for it. She's fantastic in getting people to open up and just be there. You know, and you're right. You could tell when they were on the set, they were way far back.
Yeah.
You know, so they were kind of like, okay, look, we're going to do this and we'll put it on the Blu-ray. They probably didn't even consider airing it until they saw it finished, you know, and said, okay.
Yeah. Cause
go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It kind of looked like it would have been, cause I remember there was one kind of like that from Dusk Till Dawn. Mm-hmm. It was like a behind the scenes thing. Like you saw Quentin and George Clooney right at the beginning. And then it was kind of the crew and all that stuff. And, you know, so I guarantee you, yeah. And cause a lot of the acting stuff later on, you had, you know, pretty much Emilia Clarke in makeup, which I'm actually surprised she was able to do that so off, go in there, but that was pretty cool because that's, you know, that was neat to show. But also maybe in between takes, like you could tell there was certain, like when Danny and John are doing their kiss at the waterfall or whatever, and then you kind of see them in between takes and they seem happy and they're goofing around, but you can see how cold people are. Like,
yeah, you just never know.
They were allowed certain little things to shoot, I'm sure, but a lot of it, I guarantee you, it just would have been if it was season two, probably would have got more access, but maybe there wouldn't have been a doc then, the demand for it, but the final season, that would have been tough to get into.
You just never know, man. With edit, and it's just like the show, you never know, Solo. It could be that we're totally right and that they were only given a certain amount of access and blah, 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 and she just made a fantastic doc out of it. Or it could be that they gave her all the access in the world, and in the end, she turned around and said to them, why do I need to make a 2-hour documentary about the people who are already on screen? I want to make it about the people that you don't
see.
That's
true.
And then she delivered.
You know what? That could be.
You just never know. Either way.
You don't know.
I thought this was a fantastic representation and in many ways thematically meshed with this, with kind of the themes of Game of Thrones. It was about Fleabottom. It was about the wee people, right? It was about the real people working every day. It reminded me a lot of the Lord of the Rings ones, just in that you could see what a community had formed, you know, in Belfast around Game of Thrones. And like, it was just, man, it was really cool, dude. I love the way they built the whole King's Landing set in the,
oh, the Dubrovnik set. Like, wow.
I got to tell you.
That was awesome.
It was so cool, too, because that is totally the type of shit that really happens, where people are sitting around and they're like, how they're never going to let us shoot this destruction on those streets. You know, we were lucky we got away with the walk, or, and that's just with crowds. And then we could shoot the close-ups in a studio when they're throwing things at her and stuff, but there's no way we can do that. And then some person just looks out a window and goes, what the hell's going on with that?
Yeah.
Right. And then they go, what do you mean? Yeah. They go, well, we could build a street there. And then they all look out the window and go, holy shit, who owns that? Do we own that? You know what I mean? Right? Yeah. And then they're like, calling, like, okay, hey, Jim, can you call down and ask who owns, why, who's parked out there now? Oh, it's a construction guy. You know what I mean? And then they find out that they own it. And then 2 days later, they're building a set there. And that really happens, stuff like that. It's amazing. Like, so much of film and TV and all this is just really problem solving.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. Great point there, Axel. And what about when the shot of the Ferris wheel?
Yes.
And then the camera pulls and then you see shooting going on right there.
I loved it, dude.
I mean,
I love it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I watched it last night, and I enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, it wasn't the best doc in the world, but for a Game of Thrones fan and to see it, I enjoyed it, and I thought it actually was well. Like, when I say not the best doc in the world, of course, it wasn't a Heath Solo true crime whodunit doc, but it was very interesting.
Yes.
And I think it was important to have been done. It was done very well. And, like, as we know, following the extra, who knows? She might have thought it was going to be one day, and then all of a sudden it became interesting, and then she follows him. The next thing you know, you got a whole storyline that was interesting to me. Like you talked about his emotion. My God, it was so awesome. It was just, and shooting documentaries, when you get that, raw emotion from people.
Oh, dude, yeah.
And it just organically, it is magic.
She's good, man. Her name is Jeannie Finlay, and she's made a couple other, look her up. She was on, I started following her on Twitter before the season a little bit during when they said that they were going to play this doc. I was kind of interested because I think she's local to Belfast too, I believe. So it's just really... Yeah,
I did hear her Irish accent.
Yeah. And that's cool, man. That's like... It's always awesome when a huge entity like that chooses someone local or, hey, our own person made it, and they get what it's about. They didn't bring in, like, Zack Snyder to do the Game of Thrones doc. You know what I'm saying, dude? Like, man, I like that. And she did it and again, it's so naturalist, fly on the wall. It reminded me of Maisel's brothers, of course, and just great American and French kind of cinema where you just let it happen in front of you. And I'm sure she shot like 50 hours of, if not more, of footage. And there's probably going to be even more, I hope, on the the Blu-rays and where they put it on YouTube and everything, because this kind of stuff is really fun. I just think she did a great job, and it really brought me back. But again, after it was over, my wife said to me, "Did you watch it with Renata?"
No, she's in the middle of final exams now.
Because so I would wonder how she would ask you questions, because it's your work, and Perry was kind of like, after she looked at me and she said, "Hey, honey, did watching that make you miss doing that?" Cause obviously now I'm a stay at home dad and a podcaster and I don't do. And I said, "You know what? I could be there tomorrow. Like if the door opened if I opened the front door and I walked onto the Game of Thrones set, I'd feel totally comfortable. I'd get to work and I'd have a great time. And I'd feel totally in my element. Those are my people. You know what I mean? But I really don't miss nights that long. And you say, a lot of the people are probably doing well. But a lot of these people, once a job ends, they got to get to the next one. You know, as you know, there's a lot of insecurity. 98% of the people working in film and television don't know what their next job is. They're lucky to have health insurance. They work extraordinary hours. Remember Haxel Wexler's son made a documentary about people who work too long hours, and there's a history of car accidents and accidents with people working on sets. And that part of it, it's just, it's a lifestyle choice. You know that, Solo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And yeah, it is fun. But, you know, the one thing one of the producers said, she goes, having Game of Thrones in your resume is going to open up more doors, or it's going to be, you know, you'll know that you worked hard. And
that's
you
true.
Know, and a lot of these people, and a lot of it too is, it's, I mean, when you start out and stuff, but it's like when you become part of a team, there's a good chance it's, you know, the head of the department gets a job, then depending on what job they get, then they can bring in their group. But yeah, there's the uncertainty. You know, you get a lot of people like, my one friend Mike was a Teamster, and he worked all the time, but there was even a couple of months where he just goes on unemployment and then gets hired again and goes back. I mean, when you get lucky to be part of a show for 8 years, the consistency's there, that's great. But you're right, the people end Game of Thrones, and you know, you'll get a lot of people get paid well, whatever, and then you get people who get paid, but they still need to work, of course. It's not like they're making millions.
Yeah.
And you're just waiting for that next gig, and hopefully it'll work out, but at the same time, you don't know, or people take jobs with less money, and then you got to rethink certain things. So it's just, unfortunately, you're right. It's very, you just don't know sometimes when your next job's coming. But if you're lucky enough to work under someone who really likes you and you become part of their team, that, of course, helps the chances as well.
Yeah, dude. Like I say, it's a lifestyle choice. And for me, when she said that, do I miss it? I said, well, you know what? I do miss it. But then again, I like being here with the family, and it's a lot of crazy hours, and especially on the side I would be on, which would be the side that is there 4 hours before you, Solo.
Oh yeah. Oh, believe me. And one reason why I did the PA thing on a movie for 2 months is to, so now when I'm on a set as an actor, I know what people go through.
Yeah.
And believe me, there was, our shoots, you know, were like, you know, 6, 7 a.m. till 8, 9 at night, sometimes later. And I remember it was one night we got let go at like 6, and I'm like, wow, I can run a couple errands now. I mean, I had no time. Because not only was I working on this film, then I was bartending one night. So I was working 6 days a week, and I had Sundays off. And it was just like, it was, you know, a big commitment. And, you know, I was young enough where I could do it, of course. And then once you get in the routine, you can almost do anything. But it's very draining. Because when you get home, you want to, like, unwind, and you're like, well, I should go to sleep now because I have to get up early. I'm going to watch one more episode of Alias.
and then all of a sudden
it's like, fuck, why did I go to bed?
And it's a lot of obsessive people too. Like, you see the way they showed how David Nutter did his camera setups, where he had his assistant cut out little pieces, and he had this whole methodology to it. And trust me, people might say, oh, well, he's a director, that's why he's so obsessive. No, the person who, like, makes the costumes is that obsessive. The person who just sews the banners is that obsessive. Like, it is an industry of obsessive people.
Right.
The actors, from the actors to the producers, it's obsessive artists. It's all artists. So everybody believes in what they do and they're passionate, but that also means that it's like, it's not unusual for people to like cry on the set. Like when Kit Harington was crying, and Perry said to me, well, he's crying a lot, you know, like, and then you think that's his job. You know what I mean? Like, how many times you cry at work when you're bartending, Solo, you know, like maybe you
every
cry
5 minutes, every 5 minutes, bro. Why the hell do I have to be here?
But I mean, it's just like, you forget that that's his job as an actor. And that, as you as an actor know that, like, to be in touch with your emotions all the time is what your job is. So
I'm glad you brought that up, you know? Because it was a really quick shot, Axel, but I'm sure you picked up on it. They were doing the funeral scene where they were burning the bodies after the Battle of Winterfell. And Sophie Turner's doing her scene, you know, Theon, David Nutter's giving her direction on, you know, what to do. And then if you notice, they were in between takes and working on her wardrobe, and she was still crying.
Yeah.
Did you notice that shot? Yeah, it was just like, I wish it would happen so fast, and I'm like, wait a minute, I want to know more about it. You know, was it her process, or was it just she got emotional? You know, because, you know, you could see Emilia Clarke, she was able to kind of laugh and shut off at times, you know, during an emotional scene. But it just like she was really affected by it. And I don't know if she was, you know, I don't know what was happening, but it might have been real emotional, or she just wanted to keep it going. Who knows? But that was very interesting. And then if you notice Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke are doing their kissing scene, and it's not all bed and roses. It's like, all right, little to the left. Tilt here, Kit. Yeah, look this way. You know.
Yeah, definitely. You forget. I think one of the things, too, when they were doing that part, it made me remember times that I was on camera or directing, and you kind of fall into like the hitch, and you as an actor, I'm sure, feel this way. You fall into like the Hitchcock kind of cattle thing, where you start treating the actor just like they're a piece of furniture. You know, like you just need, like, turn them that way, do this, do that. And
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And you see the same thing with the extras, where people are just, they're just holding them. Okay, go. Oh no, go. You know what I mean? And it's like, people are just, a lot of times too, camera, production, actors are just other things that move on screen, you know, and the humanity of it can be a kind of, you know, at certain times has to kind of be erased. And that's why it was beautiful, those little moments they caught with Kit Harington crying and Sophie Turner crying. Like, it's, you know, when your job is to be emotional, it's going to be emotional. And it has to be like a safe space for you to do that in. You know what I mean? Because that's not appropriate if you're like working at McDonald's, you know, like if you walked up and ordered, say, can I have 3 Big Macs? And the person started crying, oh, that Big Mac reminds me of my mama. you would be like, what the hell are you doing? But if you're on set and everybody's acting and all this, there's all these crazy artists, people like sets can be high emotional, high drama places, you know? So that it just adds to it. I don't know. We just started talking, but that was fun, man. I like to hear. See, you're lucky. You get like a trailer and stuff, and you get a little of that feeling of Kit Harington when you walk out onto a set. Like, we're there. Like, they're there for you now. Like, we're all there to help you do your job as an actor, because that's really the job of all the crew.
Yeah, and you know what? I could see, you know, and people, it's tough when you get treated so well, and then you do your job, and it, you know, and especially the Kit Harington, I mean, it was the star, and it's just, you know, it's you could definitely see a difference between a small indie film and a big production like that, because there's just certain union rules and whatever, but they really do take care of their actors. Now, you know, some shows maybe not as well. The extras are more like cattle. They, you know, they have to sit outside. They don't get their trailers. Yeah. They can't like eat to a certain. Yeah. And so it is. But you know, it sometimes seems over. But if you got a lot of lines and you got an emotional scene, it's good to have that space. And to be able to prepare, but it is pretty sweet. I do have to say, I mean, it's, and so that's why it's so tough. Like I work, you know, maybe 4 days on a show and I have this beautiful trailer and I'm doing, you know, getting paid well and doing my job. It's something I love. And then you go sling drinks for a weekend. It's like, that's when I start crying. So,
well, and then it shows, that's like, that's the draw of TV and film, right? And we get all caught up in it and people talk about it and all that. And then you don't often think about it on that kind of level. And that's why I thought this doc was cool. And I love when I get to hear your story still solo of going to sets and talking to people. And, you know, it's like you say too, we always say, it's just a job. It really is a job, you know?
Yeah. And I learned a lot from these documentaries and different things where how actors like George Clooney, acted on set. And he was a big influence for me because I could see him interact with the people. He was nice to everyone. And honestly, when I was like, oh, I want to be like that. And that's why, like, it was so rewarding. I did this short film, Scorpion, a while back. And, you know, it was a long night shoot, a lot of dialogue. But, like, in between takes and stuff, I'd crack people up. We'd have a good time. And then when we did a behind-the-scenes kind of, you know, little featurette, one of the actors was like, you know, it was so funny. He goes, yeah, and work, you know, he mentioned me working with me and blah, blah, blah. And he always keeps it light on the set. And there was a clip of me and him goofing around. You know, it was just like, oh,
Solo.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah, it's like,
and
cool.
People remember it, man. People really remember it, dude. Like because those kind of divisions or, you know, I'm trying to figure out a word to say that it's kind of like a caste system in a way. I wanted to try to avoid using that word, but it kind of is. Those do follow when the camera is turned off, you know, and like people expect you as the actor to have this personality and like entertain them, you know? And so that becomes a thing that a lot of actors, that's why they don't eat with the crew or they go back to their trailer because they don't want to have to be on all the time. You know?
Right. And
I always respected that.
Yeah. And that's why it's not like, oh, they don't want to be. It's just, you know, especially if you have a long day or whatever, you just need the break. And then, you know, but also when you see an actor like having a good time or being, you know, it's also a relief to the crew and to the director.
Definitely.
Because it's like, because you're like, okay, he's having a good time. This is good. It makes the set more. If it's tense and you're yelling at someone for getting in your eye line and all that, Christian Bale, it affects the crew.
It does.
And people don't know to talk to you or not. And so that's why, like, my thing is, I know exactly when I need to talk, what the pecking order is. Like, for me, like, working on Snowfall, same type of thing, like, but like the director, once he starts talking to us and we're like, then it like, cause you don't, when you go onto a new set, you don't want to like, you know, be like you're in control and you're the big star. Cause you know, you're not necessarily, but it's like, once you get in the groove and you know how things work, it's, you know, we've cracked up, we've had some fun and stuff, but it, you know, it's different layers of it, but you have to see where it's at. You got to have a feel for the crew for the first time. Okay. Is everyone tense? Is everyone like not personable or whatever? So it takes a little time. And by like the third day we're shooting, it was, you know, everyone knows you now. So it's different and it's fun.
It is fun. So. And you know what? Solo, it really is true that what you said, like the crew believes that their job, even down to the PAs, and I would say this because we would talk about it as PAs, our job really was to make this happen for the actors and the like director camera, right? To really, that was our job. So if an actor ever said to me, like, wow, thanks, man. I really felt like, wow, it made me feel really good. Really, the actor has such an important role on a set that even though a lot of people think, oh, they just act and then they go back to their trailer the PA doesn't care, or the crew doesn't care about the actor or something. No, it's really like a synergy. And when an actor can give a great performance and feel good, or they get it in a couple of takes, the whole crew feels like they did a great job, down to the person who picked up the car, You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Or the craft services people. So you really do have so much riding. Like, you could tell when Kit Harington walked onto the set and then just, and remember he said, oh my God, it's the last day. And he walked out. Mm-hmm. You could see that, like, everybody was watching him.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, they just felt his presence on the set. And it really is true that the crew feels like their job is to make the actor feel at home enough to give a great performance. And that's when you know you have a great company working together, because I'm sure you've been on sets too where people are like, screw this. This is a terrible job. And it shows on camera.
Oh, sure does.
You know? Yeah, so it's sure really, does. It's not just like, oh, they do a little thing that you never get to see. You really do get to see it. Like, and it an actor, like you saying, like you thinking about that, hey, I want to joke around with the cast, with the crew and stuff. That actually really does help. And I think that mm-hmm. when I would be a PA and I would sit down to eat, and the actor would take their food and sit next to me instead of go back to their trailer, everybody at the table would all of a sudden get a little bit of energy and feel like,
yeah, it's like,
this is a good shoot.
Yeah. It's like one of the, I don't know, it was assistant makeup artist or someone that was on set makeup artist. And we're sitting there and they were releasing the extras. And then as they're walking by, he goes, live your best life. And then we all looked at him like, live your best life. So then we started saying it to everyone. And then when I came back 3 weeks later, he comes up to me and we both point, live your best life. Like, it was just a little thing, but it was hilarious. It's and it was something that we always, you know, it was fun. It was a good connection there. And, you know, it just, and it's tough too when, and for Game of Thrones for 8 seasons, but when you, like, even if you work on a thing for 3 days, it's sad leaving when you're all done. Yeah. Like, cause then you move on to something new. You may run in. It's funny when you do run into people after years, like, oh my God, we worked together on this. Or you'll see people, like, people always come up to me on Moosehead. Have we worked before? Like, I don't know if I have a familiar face or whatever. And most of the time, probably not, or maybe, but it's funny how, you know, a lot of people like, where have I seen you? And then it's like, if you watch that damn ID channel, I'm on there all the time. Maybe that's. But
I killed like 4 people.
And I was killed once, and I arrested one. But it's just all in all, it was a good. I'm glad. Aside from wanting to see more of the table read and certain acting stuff for my own selfishness, I'm glad Miss Finlay did what she did, because it was really not what I expected. But it was enjoyable, and it was cool to see. Like, as much as I want to see the acting stuff, I was actually excited to see the building, the sets and stuff. Stuff I don't get to see that often. It was pretty cool.
It was great, man. And it goes. It just goes back to what we always try to talk about. You know, why do people even make TV shows and films? And people say, oh, they make it to make money, and HBO is going to make all this money, and this is a job and blah. But then when you look at this and you see, like I say, it's just a lot of obsessive, artistic people who want to make this choice. Like that, the background actor who he says this has been the best 5 years of his life, but you got to think they only shoot for, couple months, 3-4 months. He's got a lot of life in between that. You know, but it still helps him maybe get another job, and then maybe even this community builds up and they start shooting more stuff there, which I think they already did a good amount of shooting there for other like BBC stuff or other European stuff. And that's just cool that it shows in the end what it's really about, us podcasting, the community. It's the same thing on the other side. Like you say, it just ends up being like a big summer camp, right? Like you're with the people for a certain amount of time. You create something together and then you let it go and it goes off into the world.
It does. And then, and it, you know,
And we sit and make fun of it on a podcast.
And you make fun of it on a podcast. It's great.
All that hard work. All that hard work.
Yeah.
All right. All so, hard work, you know what? We didn't end up actually talking a lot about your opinions on the finale, but we could probably do that on another show. We've been talking for a while now.
Okay. I'll just give a couple of tidbits.
Oh, okay. Let's get into it. I thought you might have to go.
No, I do, but you know what? I love talking to you, so what the heck?
Let's do it.
No, just all in all, like, initial reaction, I saw it when it first aired, before we got on, it was boom. I thought it was perfect. Then, second watching, I saw how it affected Lady Solo, and I didn't enjoy it as much. So I was caught in between two, you know, views. Then I start listening to some podcasts that hated it and were just nasty about it. And I'm like, okay, what the hell? Then I hear you and Ken and I'm like, ah, perspective. I heard you and Jack. That was cool, you know. And then I let it sit in. And you know what? I really enjoyed it. I thought I wanted happiness for my Starks and I got that. And we went through this journey so much, Axel, of, you know, red weddings and different things. And it's just like, oh my gosh, what in the Sam hell? It's like, how are these people going to survive? Are they not? And the only issue, you know, the Dragon Pit stuff, but that kind of like fit to where the epilogue was going and after, because Danny getting killed really. I mean, you could have stopped it there and people would have been pissed, of course, but you could have deduced what happened after that. But, we needed the epilogue to, to further that. But man, I love it. I love the whole show. It's going to be nice to let it sink in and then eventually go back to it. It's been, 8 years of our lives. I want to watch other shows and stuff. But it just really, I think later on, and I hope, at least for me, I loved the experience. It was great. And I really did enjoy this season. It had its flaws, but man, I think it had more positives and more amazing things happen than flaws. And I just I'm not worried about, how long it took Danny and John to fall in love, quote unquote, or her to go mad, or whatever. It was emotional. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking about it with you all season. And it just, it was an epic show, man. And what they accomplished, man, with how many freaking characters, and how many set pieces, and locations, and this was epic, man. And again, TV, film, and books, two different mediums. I'm sorry, you can't have, but I mean, and one thing I miss, Axel, do you remember, I think maybe our culture is changing, whatever, I don't want to go too deep into it, but I remember back in the day when you found out a movie was awesome through word of mouth, you couldn't wait to go to the movies and see it and experience it as well. And I remember when people were like, oh, and I saw Shawshank. I'm like, you got to see it. I told millions of people because I experienced it not knowing what it was going to be about, loved the movie, and then everyone else saw it or saw it on videotape or whatever and was like, oh, my God, this is great. Thank you for letting me know about this movie. And it just got me so excited that other people loved the stuff I did. Now it seems like the opposite. People just want to be negative and are looking to hate on things, and it's more the opposite. And I miss when we all enjoyed something, but all that matters is me and you, what we think, because we're the ones talking to each other. I mean, not to sound like an ass, but honestly, I care about what people talk about on this podcast and how they're feeling versus other things, just because, these are people I talk to you about it. You got DJ, you got the whole crew, joining in. And so it's just, I don't know, it was a great experience. And I never thought after Lost, I never thought there'd be another show that would capture me like this. And Game of Thrones, maybe not fully because I was so obsessed with Lost and it was a different time in my life. But man, the Thrones was, man, it was a big deal, from the emergency podcast to, you know, talking about a doc at the end of the show. It's been so much fun to talk to you about it and everyone else. And, I just really enjoyed the experience and, really did love the finale. And I think, like you were saying, the battle at King's Landing and the finale, put those two together. Wow. 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 And if you look at, it's easy to do a series finale when you're dealing with three or four characters in like a small town versus the epic of what Game of Thrones is. And they made a great point in the documentary too. It has to end now. To go bigger, it just couldn't be done. Money-wise and stress-wise, and, you know, they didn't have anything left in them. And you can't blame someone for that. You look how much work, that's 8 years of their lives. It's, you know, to do, and without changing a lot of the crew and the people behind it, God, it just, it had to end now. Yeah. And I'm glad it did, and I thought it ended on a great note.
That's good, buddy. I feel the same way. I really liked the finale as time goes on. All 8 days that have gone past since the end. But this season was a lot of fun. You know, it had its ups and downs with some, you know, people not liking it and having to kind of deal with that. But when I just sat down and watched the show, I loved it. I had a lot of fun. We both knew going in, yeah, okay, maybe this is condensed in some way. You know what I mean? They're not going to do five more seasons, and this is such a sprawling story. But again, we got what we got, and who knows what it would have been the other way, a bunch of people complaining about how they're adding extra episodes to pad it, you know? So, like you said, we do seem to live in a time when people, and maybe it's always this way and it's just a reflection, social media and such is just a reflection of what has always been, where it's, you know, it's always easier to go negative, right?
I guess for most people, for me, it's easier for me to go positive.
I know. That's the way it is for me too, Solo. But
life is so much better. Honestly, I got enough to complain about. And if I complain, no, other than my wife, no one gives a crap about, you know. And you know what? Especially about a TV, what I think about a TV show. So it's, again, it's just where I'm at in life too. Yeah. I'd rather be more positive because, you know, we all have our struggles and all that, and we like to escape. And now, if I escape into a world that's making me upset, then don't escape to it. Escape to something else. But if that's what your escape is, to be negative and to criticize things, then God bless you. But I can't. I have my things, and I could be much worse on a podcast. The stuff I have to complain about, listening to podcasts or people's, I just choose not to get involved because I don't need that added stress. Believe me, I could go on hours of the difference of opinions and things I think people, you know, with what people say, and then I just think they're wrong. But I'm probably wrong too, and I know I'm wrong most of the time. But we're not wrong about how we feel, and how I feel is positive, and I enjoyed the show. And then you could say the same people who are negative, but I just, again, it's about delivery. And if you're just like, man, I really didn't like that part. Yeah, that didn't work for me. But if you're like, well, you know, the dragon couldn't think that and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, this is lazy writing and this is crap. Okay. Well, all right. So you're upset. But then if you're upset every day and doing it and just piling on, you know, give some backup to it. Or hell, try writing yourself, you know, because even like some podcast, I don't want to do this, but one last one, Axel. You know, people like, oh, that was stupid. They should do it this way. And I'm like, your way was even dumber. But because there's only two of you talking, like us, you think it's the greatest idea. But why don't we tweet about what your ideas were and see how the people, you know. So anyway, I whatever. I don't want to end on a negative note. So what I'm saying is, I choose to be positive. I don't. There are things that upset me, but I try to channel that in other ways. And, you know, honestly, as much as I'd love so a lot of my Twitter followers and people I interact that I, you know, a lot of people we haven't met, but, you know, you feel like you know people and they listen to you and they feel like they know you and like that. It's just, but there's people that I'm not going to get in an argument with someone. I have no idea who they are because, yeah. Especially too, text wise or, you know, characters, people could say something, maybe forget to put an LOL. They might be joking or they may be just, yeah, you know, doing it for, you just don't know sometimes. It's so hard to take it. Which way are they going? So, you know, it's just, that's why I trust you and I talk to you because I know what I'm going to get when I talk to the Axel Folo.
Well, baby, it's been a great season. It's been a lot of fun. And I haven't really, and I think you might say this too, I haven't had to try to remain positive because quite honestly, I literally just really enjoyed every episode this season. I really had fun with it. And
yeah.
I didn't end. Sometimes I do watch a show and at the end I say, yeah, you know what? I watch TV and I on daily DVR, I talk about stuff and I was like, this just didn't work. This just really didn't work. I'm not sure what they were going for. But for me, this season worked. This finale worked. I love the doc. It's been fun talking to you about it. We'll be back to talk about tons of stuff, maybe some more Game of Thrones. This might be our end for Game of Thrones this season for a little while. Who knows? Maybe we'll feel like talking about it sooner rather than later, but it was certainly been fun, Solo, doing the IR with you and getting to do the deep dives every week with you has been a highlight of the season for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, same here, buddy. I really did look forward to talking to you every week.
And yeah.
Because one of the reasons why I started podcasting, because I had no one to talk Lost to. And the one friend that I knew watched the show stopped watching in the middle of season two. I'm like, what? So I had no one to talk to. So it took me, and after we got to go back, I was like, I need to talk to someone.
Now you so, got it, baby.
That's why you're the man, and I love talking to you about it. And, yeah, let's just, you know, I'm with you. I just loved, the reason why I stay positive with all the negative stuff, because I did, like you, I enjoyed the show. I mean, I had a great time with it, and it was a great series. Great series.
Definitely. Well, that is all for us today, ladies and germs. And we're going to be back talking about, I know I'll be back later this week. I'm going to try to hook up with Justin and talk a little bit about the season and other stuff as well, because Justin's got a lot to talk about. I know DJ Tim Hines is planning on doing a roundtable to go over the season. I think he's going to do that next Monday. Hopefully Jim or Gina and those great people who have been coming out will do that. I wanted to take a moment to give a shout out. There was about 10 or so people who gave us iTunes reviews. I want to thank all of them. That's been really wonderful to see those reviews. A lot of people emailed. Howard, I got your emails. I am going to jump on and do a final season feedback. So if anybody has some season feedback, send that in and I'm going to include a bunch of emails that came towards the end of the finale, but that were really more about kind of the season as a whole. And I'm going to do that too. So our coverage of Game of Thrones is not yet completely, but it is coming, you know, winding down. I do want to make an announcement for Matt, Matt's Game of Thrones audio blog. He's going to be, I think, diving into Fire and Blood. And I think, Bubba might be joining them. I know the Sirens, Kelly and Holly, some other folks, Mike John, maybe will join him too. So keep watch of that. I know a lot of other people are continuing going. I think History of Westeros is doing a reread. And so the community does continue. The prequels are coming. It's not really so much an end, Solo, because you and I will be doing the prequels and talking about it again, right?
Damn right. Okay, I'm in for good. The prequels with you, buddy.
All right, good. Woo! Oh, man, that saves me from having to find someone else to yap at.
I'll be there. I'll be there for you. These five words I swear to you. When you breathe, I want to be the air for you.
I'll be there for you.
Derek Ailey's, my Derek Ailey's, my Dracarys.
I'm a watcher. Dario 2.0.
Oh, we didn't see him, but you know what? Man. Peace out, Dario.
All right, that's it, baby.